Hello and welcome to part two of our exclusive interview with the Right Honourable David Davis MP. Now, as a reminder, part one covered David Davis's time in DexU, the government's no deal planning, and Mr. Davis's major concerns with the proposed withdrawal bill. In this section, we're going to cover trade policy, potential implications for a failed vote, and the prospects for a leadership challenge. But before any of that, please listen first to our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
So what was agreed with the EU then regarding the customs arrangement then?
Well, there isn't one yet. What is really agreed is that they will continue. We will continue to be in the customs union or a customs union with the European Union until we've got an alternative worked up.
Oh, I see. So in which case it doesn't matter who.
Well, it does matter because you know if it's a future customs arrangement, it could be 10 years time. We could still be in the customs union in 10 years, you know, which will be an extraordinary failure.
And so one of the things that's very controversial about the temporary customs union then is our ability to leave, yeah. Or the fact that we don't have that ability, we have to sort of request it. Is that an accurate sort of description of
yes,
the problem?
Yes, it is. Basically, the European Union has a veto on our leaving the customs union. And what you have to bear in mind is that for two reasons, the European Union is very reticent about agreeing anything which is to our advantage. One is because they are afraid that if we leave and succeed, others may be tempted to leave and succeed. That's reason number one. I think it's a false logic, because I don't think anybody else is in the position wanting to leave. And the second reason just relates to their own competitive ability. Anything that gives us a competitive advantage, they don't want to see us have, because we're competing with France, and Germany, and so on. When we leave the customs union, the point of leaving, we can start the actual free trade agreements with the rest of the world. We can sign them beforehand, but they can't come into effect until we've left. Now, the very fact that it's uncertain, the very fact that it's delayed, handicaps our ability to do those free trade deals. And so we won't have an advantage.
And what prevents us from unilaterally deciding that we want to leave this arrangement?
Well, at the moment, today, we can.
Right.
But once we sign a treaty, this treaty will be binding on us. It's very hard to walk. This country doesn't walk away from treaties. You know, once it signs a treaty, it sticks by it. So actually, we'll be more locked in after signing this withdrawal agreement than we are now. More.
So we've always had the ability to unilaterally leave the European Union.
There's nothing about the European Union that says you can't walk away. There's an Article 50 process to leave, but up until then, there's nothing to say you couldn't just repudiate the way they say the phrase they use, repudiate the treaty.
Okay, and so what? How do you think this arrangement is going to? Actually, sorry, if you could talk us through the next step then. So this is not part of the withdrawal agreement. You're happy with the withdrawal agreement. Is that right?
No. You're confusing withdrawal agreement and withdrawal act.
Okay, fine.
The withdrawal act is what Parliament passed.
Right.
The withdrawal agreement is what's being negotiated.
That's what we've just been talking about.
Yes.
Right, now. I see.
Right. The government has to has to do two things. Firstly, it has to go to Brussels for the council this weekend to get approval from the council for this, then it has to come back to the Commons, probably have a five-day debate on the proposed withdrawal treaty, and then have a vote. And I think it will lose that vote.
Okay. And what do you think will happen then?
Well, it depends who you listen to. The government has put the vote back. It was going to be on the 10th of December. Now it's going to be on the 17th of December. I think that is deliberate to put pressure on people voting against it. The government's line, depending on who it's talking to, and this is the interesting thing because it says two different things. If it's talking to Remainers, it says voting against this, you'll end up with no deal. Leaving, but no deal. If it's talking to Leavers, it says you'll end up not leaving. Now, one of these is not true, but that's obviously they're both risks, but one of them is not true. So it's playing a bit fast and loose in the middle. The likelihood is that that strategy will not work. Today in Parliament, Wednesday, today in Parliament, the Prime Minister was attacked from the right and the left on the Tory benches, from a Leaver and a Remainer. Each of them saying the deal was not good enough. So I think it'll be rejected. Not just by Tories, but the DUP will vote against it because of the proposals about Northern Ireland, which will effectively keep Northern Ireland in the single market. That's what it will effectively do. Therefore, it will create a border between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, which is complete anathema to the DUP, because obviously anything that pushes the Northern Ireland towards a republic and away from Britain is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also anathema to all Scots Tories.
Yeah.
Because it will actually reinforce the argument of the SNP that they want Scotland in the single market. So Scots Tories, DUP, that's 20 votes there. You've got about 80 Jacob Rees-Mogg brigades, you know, the sort of the ERG and people like that. And you've probably got about another 20 Remainers who don't like it. So it's going to go down.
But to come back to the previous question, so we know what the government say will happen if that happens, but what do you think will happen?
I think the first thing will happen is they'll go back to Europe, and there'll be an argument with them about getting a new deal, a new proposal. Now, up until now, the negotiation has been entirely with the Commission. Now, that's been perfectly reasonable from the European point of view because they haven't been at risk. But as this goes later and later, various countries will see their own national interest engaged. So to give you the most stark example, the BDI, the German equivalent to the CBI, is always incredibly compliant in public with its own government. You never hear the BDI arguing with its government. It does what it's told, basically. It's not like our organisations, it's different. However, a few weeks ago, the BDI suddenly started saying to the government, you cannot allow a no deal to come into effect. Why is that? Well, I went to talk to the German industry in Bavaria, as I said. And what I said to them is, the combination of currency effects and tariff effects in the event of no deal will cost you probably at least one third of your car sales in the UK. That's an enormous number of car sales, about 300,000 cars a year. Similarly, tariff effects and currency effects on dairy products will probably cost you two-thirds of your dairy product sales. So these will be really heavy impacts on Germany. And Germany's not the worst affected. Northwest France will be badly affected. Wine sales probably badly affected. Cheese sales in Belgium and the Netherlands. All the cross-channel traffic sales will be impacted, so that would probably knock 3 or 4% off their GDP. In Ireland, something like 70% of their beef sales, big agricultural business with the UK, that faces a 40% tariff if we've got a no deal under the World Trade Organization rules. Now, we may find ways of patching all this up, but the simple truth is the risk of all that is really very serious. So the 27 will suddenly have to focus very, very hard on getting a deal that doesn't allow that to happen. For our part, we don't want it to happen either. It's not by no means the best outcome. Some of my colleagues think it is. some of my colleagues have a utopian view of this. Well, we'll have a few problems, but we'll get past them. This gives us the most freedom. Others have a dystopian view and say it'll be a disaster. Neither are right. It's in the middle. It's perfectly manageable, but it's not the best outcome. The best outcome is a proper, comprehensive free trade agreement.
So to come back to the question then, what happens if the agreement, if I use the right term, is voted down? The answer is we go back to Brussels and get a better deal.
And you haven't got very long. You've only got a few weeks, really. And the reason you've only got a few weeks is because of the timetables in Parliament for ratification and subsequent legislation, and the timetables in the European Parliament and in the Council.
And what could be... What could be achieved then in that period of time?
Well, my view is that we would reset back to a sort of Canada-style deal. I mean, what you would all, because of time, and also because of the sensitivity of the European Union, you'd have to reset back to things they've done already. So there's the Canada deal, which is probably their most advanced free trade deal. There's a prospective Japanese deal, which they've done a lot of work on. There's the South Korean deal. South Korean deal is very interesting, because it allows the export of cars from Korea to Europe without being inspected a second time. Quite important, you know, a mutual recognition arrangement. They can do that because Europe uses a set of guidelines and standards which are fairly global. But the basic approach is a very good one. So we could go back, and it is what we've been working on. I mean, we were working on when I was in government. We go back and say, here is our best idea of a good deal. And if they agree it substantively, it doesn't have to be fine detail, if they agree it substantively, that would allow us to say, yes, you can have the 39 billion that we've negotiated as our exit fee, if you like. Yes, you can have all the citizens' rights undertakings and underpinnings that we've negotiated in the last couple of years. The whole series of things that we've negotiated which will be released by that. And never underestimate how important that is. That 39 billion will allow, in this financial round, no country to pay more taxes into Europe and no country to receive less in terms of subventions from Europe. That is an incredibly powerful political fact.
And you made that sound very plausible. What was the Prime Minister's rationale for not pursuing that route?
Well, the question you really have to ask her rather than me, but my best guess is...
I assume you've asked her.
Not quite in those terms. Blow by blow through the whole process. Part of the reason, I think, was that there was a slightly artificial difference of view on Northern Ireland. The feeling that the free trade deal didn't deal with Northern Ireland. Now, Northern Ireland is important. We don't want to recreate the troubles, although people who know better than me, like David Trimble, say it won't happen. But nevertheless, we want to maintain the visible border there. And there was a massive difference of view between us and the European Union over that border. And our ability to argue the case was handicapped by the fact that we were tying ourselves to this future customs arrangement, which I always thought was daft, whereas the accelerated or the streamlined or the MAXFAC arrangement is actually much more designed to cope with the Northern Ireland border. So that's one reason. Another reason, I think, was really a question of nerve. I was willing perhaps to go further, closer to the brink than others were. So there are a variety of tactical and strategic reasons. And Whitehall, I mean, there's no doubt that Whitehall prefers the least change possible. I don't. I think this is a point of liberation of the British economy. So the least change possible. Look, when Margaret Thatcher was reforming the economy in 1979 through the 80s, Whitehall was not on her side, you know, and we've got the same sort of position here. It's natural for civil servants to want to minimise risk and minimise change, and that's the sort of advice the Prime Minister has been getting.
Okay, well, the Prime Minister is obviously under a certain amount of pressure at the moment.
Yeah, a little bit.
Anything you'd care to tell us about whether you've been writing any letters recently?
Oh, no. I mean, I was asked that the other day, and as I said then, I said the first person to know if I ever intend to write a letter, which I don't at the moment, if ever I intend to write a letter, I would tell her first. give her the opportunity of coming back first. The second person to know would be Graham Brady, and that would be it. I wouldn't tell anybody else. I approve of the Prime Minister. She and I have a big difference of opinion on one subject, but I think she's a good Prime Minister, and that's that.
And so you want to see her remain in?
Listen,
place.
I don't think that we need any more disruption than we've got already.
Okay. Well, I'm sure most of our listeners would echo that that sentiment. David Davis, thank you very much.
My pleasure.